Some of you may remember author Arnie Bernstein. He's been on the WKAR airwaves before. Most recently, he joined us to talk about the after effects of the Newtown, Connecticut school shooting. The reason we turned to him at that time is that he's the author of the book Bath Massacre, about the 1927 bombing of the school in Bath, Michigan, in which 45 people were killed and many more injured, most of them children. Bernstein's new book is about the rise of an American Nazi movement in the 1930s, which had strong ties to the city of Detroit. It's called Swastika Nation, Fritz Kuhn, and the Rise and Fall of the German-American Bund. Bernstein spoke with Current State's Melissa Benmark about his book.
The book is about the German-American Bund, which was a pro-Nazi movement of the late 1930s. They were led by a popinjay of a dictator by the name of Fritz Kuhn. He went by the title Bundesführer, and he dreamed of being the Hitler in America and leading a great Nazi movement in America. His great weakness was that he was a womanizer and used Bund money, which he was completely in charge of, to fund his little romances. He was able to marshal a movement that had some considerable force. He had family camps, a youth movement similar to Hitler Youth. He had his own version of the SS, known as the OD. There were meetings across the country. They had uniforms, publications, businesses. If he had been a businessman, a legitimate businessman in the 1930s, he would have been a genius. But again, he had the weakness for women, and despite being married with two kids. And a lot of people went after him. Dewey and LaGuardia, Thomas Dewey and Mayor LaGuardia of New York, decided that they had to stop Fritz Kuhn any way they could after he held a massive rally in Madison Square Garden in February of 1939. 20,000 Bundists were packed in to hear Kuhn and his ilk give their anti-Semitic speeches. 100,000 people were outside in the streets wanting to kill him, wanting to put a stop to this. So Dewey and LaGuardia, obviously they couldn't get him on free speech. They went after him in a different way. They started looking into the taxes, similar to the Capone conviction.
Al Capone, right.
Yeah, they looked at the taxes, and were they paying enough taxes on all the little items they sold and things like that. And then, you know, following the paper trail, they discovered that Kuhn had been embezzling Bund money and forging checks and various papers to fund his romances. This is ultimately what brought him down in the court and sent him to jail. But before that, there were other people who went after him and the Bund, one of whom was Walter Winchell, who pounded away relentlessly in his column on Kuhn. Kuhn said when he was in the White House, he would hang Walter Winchell from the highest lamp pole in front of the Stork Club, which was, of course, Winchell's hangout. And when he was deported, when Kuhn was deported, he told the officers who were escorting him back to Germany he would live to piss on Winchell's grave.
And Kuhn,
that didn't happen either. Yeah, Kuhn said he would do that.
He thought he was going to be in the White House.
Yes, he did. That was his ultimate dream.
And what kind of numbers did he have by way of support? No, how many people were involved in this?
That's kind of a tricky number because they were notoriously bad record keepers. They also were very secretive. They had various levels of membership, including one that was for sympathizers who could give anonymously. Estimates range from anywhere from 10,000 to 30,000, 40,000 nationwide at any given point between FBI, newspaper investigations, things like that. But it's really hard to say. Other enemies who went after Kuhn and the Bund included HUAC, which was formed to go after them.
Which is the House
Un-American Activities Committee.
Right.
Yeah. They were called the Committee Against Un-American Activities or something unwieldy like that, and they later shortened it to HUAC. But they were formed in essence to go after Kuhn. And of course, later, you know, morphed into Joe McCarthy's personal witch hunting unit. And perhaps the most interesting people who went after the Bund were the boys from the Jewish Mafia: Meyer Lansky, Mickey Cohn, Bugsy Siegel.
I love that you told the story of how Bugsy Siegel got his name.
Oh, God, yeah, he was braver than Bedbug, and nobody wanted to tell him that. Nobody would say that to his face either unless they wanted to pay the consequences. But they were approached, actually. Lansky was approached by some of the highest levels of Jewish leadership and judges. A anonymously, although Lansky told this to an Israeli journalist and said, you know, can you do something about this? And Lansky eagerly volunteered. And normally they would not let civilians into the organization, but so many people were saying, can we help you? Can we help you? Bugsy Siegel started training people on violent techniques to break up bun meetings and beat these guys in the streets. Lungi's woman, who was sort of the Jewish Tony Soprano, and he controlled New Jersey. He formed an army of prize fighters who would go after these guys and bust up their meetings. Mickey Cohn, of course, out in L.A., was instrumental in organizing that. And then I live in Chicago. There was a little thug named Jacob Rubenstein who teamed up with his childhood buddy, Barney Ross, who was the former prize fighter. As kids, they used to deliver envelopes for Al Capone at a buck an envelope, no questions asked. They grew up to be kind of street toughs, and Rubenstein was, you know, a low-level mobster. They used to wait in a pool hall for phone calls. They'd say, okay, the bun's meeting here. They would go to those meetings. They would go, they'd do their work and come back. And Jacob Rubenstein later changed his name to Jack Ruby.
And, you know, no kidding.
The story from there. It's that Jack Ruby.
Wow.
And all his bund activities were in the Warren Report, of all places. That's where I got a lot of information on Ruby.
Wow. One of the things about this group is that there was a fairly substantial Detroit connection having to do with Henry Ford.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. When Kuhn came to America, he was more or less ran from Germany, went to Mexico, established residency there, and then moved to the United States, which was a common thing for a lot of people immigrating at that time. And he was told Henry Ford might be a great place. There's so many people finding work there. Well, of course, Henry Ford, notoriously anti-Semitic, you know, the International Jew, which was published in his newspaper, the Dearborn Independent. And then Ford wrote an apology when people started boycotting his sales and things like that, and he realized he was in trouble. Ford released an apology, let's put it that way, saying, no, he was sorry about all the harm and things that he had caused. Now, that letter was not written by Ford. It was written by one of his flunkies, who was also a master at recreating Ford's signature. Ford never copyrighted the International Jew, which is really strange for a businessman of his, you know, vision and acumen.
Right, who copyrighted everything else.
Exactly.
Right.
So he, in essence, Ford, you know, sent it out into perpetuity. It's still, you know, of course you can download it off any number of, you know, crazy websites these days. And Hitler, of course, was enamored with it. And he had, Ford was the only American to mention in Mein Kampf, and he kept a picture of Ford on his office wall. Ford was awarded in 1938, I believe, a Medal of Honor from the German government, which he never returned even after the war broke out. Lindbergh was another one who got that medal and never returned it, by the way. So Ford was the ideal place for Kuhn and a lot of these people to work. Kuhn, because he was trained as a chemist, he got a job in the Henry Ford Hospital, which had a strict policy, no Jewish doctors, which is rather
wow.
An odd thing when you think about it. And he practiced his speeches in Ford broom closets. He previously had used the broom closets to work his little romances and with other Ford workers, but then switched to practicing speeches, things like that. He was involved with a group that was a predecessor of Bund called Friends of New Germany. And he eventually rose to the leader of the Detroit branch and then the Midwestern unit he was in charge of.
Wow.
So, I mean, Detroit was a really vital area for the growth of this group and certainly for the, you know, the development of its leader.
So after he was found guilty and of, you know, the tax charges and embezzling and such and was deported, what happened to all those people who had been following him?
Well, the Bund kind of flopped around for a while afterwards. They managed to hang on, in other words, but people started jumping ship. They, you know, they didn't want to be associated with it. And certainly the heat was coming down as the war was raging in Europe, and it was became more obvious that the United States at some point was going to enter. People started, you know, leaving the group in droves, and they floundered along. HUAC kept looking at them, investigating them. And then, of course, there was Pearl Harbor. And that, 6 days later, they officially dissolved the group. But after Kuhn, essentially, they, you know, what Dewey and LaGuardia wanted to do with their court case was to cut off the head of the dragon, and they were successful at that. The Bund hung on for another couple of years, but it was never the same. their heyday was from 36 to 39.
Why do you find yourself writing, do you think, about people with, shall we say, non-standard beliefs?
That's a good question. I wish I knew the answer. I seem to have a knack for writing about really unsavory people.
Well, that's kind of where I was going with that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's no other way to put it. There's no polite way to put it. As far as, you know, with Swastika Nation, I will never, ever have a cast of characters this crazy again between, you know, this popinjay of a Nazi leader and Walter Winchell and Ford and the gangsters and, you know, all these crazy people. And then, of course, there were Kuhn's mistresses, one of whom claimed to be Miss America, but was she? You know, have to read the book to find out. And, of course, there's a wonderful story about Bugsy Siegel in there I'm not going to tell. And I mean, it's just so crazy, a cast of characters.
Well, sometimes...
And crazy situations. It was fun to write, even though they were terrible people. They were... at times, I wasn't sure if I was writing a serious drama or a complete farce.
Arnie Bernstein, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
For Current State, I'm Melissa Benmark.